everyone, and welcome back to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum. This is episode 66. I'm your host, Andy Godoy. So this is the first episode of 2014. Now, 2013 was an amazing year for us here at Retro Asylum. We had some amazing guests, we had some amazing auditions, we had some community members on the show, and it was fantastic. And the best thing is, we even managed to get to the number one spot on iTunes just before Christmas. We were on the number one spot in games and games and hobbies for 2 days. And I want to say once again, thank you so much for doing that, guys. I really, really appreciate that. So 2014, then, we've got absolutely load of things planned. Now, before I tell you what we're going to sort of got planned and a few other bits and bobs, let me quickly tell you what we have got in line for you today. Now, first up, we're going to tell you a little bit about what I've been up to, a little bit of retro gaming chit-chat, what I've been playing, what I've got for an early birthday present. I want to do a few shout-outs, and we'll talk about a few prizes. And then the main topic is the Retro Asylum Top 20 as chosen by the Retro Asylum team and community. Right, so let's get the show going then. The first thing I want to do is do a few shout-outs. Now, the first shout-out I want to do is for Andrew Joseph. Now, if that name sounds familiar, that is because he's been on our podcast 2 times already. Now, Andrew Joseph is the head honcho of yokefolk.com. And if you don't know what that is, type it on Google and you'll find it. It's the greatest Dizzy fan site there is there. Everyone loves Dizzy. The Oliver twins love this site. And you know why? Because it's an amazing site. And why am I mentioning Andrew Joseph? Well, it's Andrew's birthday today. Now, technically, this podcast is coming out on Sunday, but I'm recording it on Friday night once I finish work. So, Andrew, you know, have a fantastic birthday, and hopefully we'll get you on the podcast once again. So, happy birthday, mate. Now, the next announcement I'd like to do, or the next shout-out, I should say, I'd like to shout-out to my mother-in-law, Karen, who apparently listens to this podcast. And another person I'd like to give a shout out to is my father-in-law, who looks a little bit like Elton John. Yeah, now, it's my wife told me recently that my in-laws have recently started listening to the podcast, so it's a bit strange and a bit surreal because they just know me as the geeky guy, you know, who's married to Gabby, and I'm the guy now who does his podcast, and it's going to be strange them listening to the show. But thank you very much, Karen and Ian. Keep on listening to the show. Hopefully you'll enjoy it. Right, so January, it's the new year. In a few days, it'll be my birthday. It's the 8th of January, guys, if you want to send me amazing presents. Nah, just kidding. But talking about presents, actually, I did receive an amazing present from Uniforex Anthony Ogden. And I tell you what, I couldn't wait to open this present. I couldn't even wait till my birthday, so I had to open it beforehand. Now, I knew what it was. Now, a few episodes ago, I think it was during the Christmas party episode, I mentioned that Anthony was thinking about selling his Super UFO Pro 8, which is a SNES flash cart. And yeah, I think he must have listened to the podcast and must have felt a little bit sorry for me, and he decided to give that to me as a present. I'm so happy and ecstatic, actually, because it's an amazing present. Now, for our listeners that don't know what the Super UFO Pro 8 is, it's a Super Nintendo cartridge which lets you put an SD card in there, which lets you back up all the games you do own, of course. And yeah, I've got one of those. The only thing is, it doesn't let you do FX chip games, but there is a way around doing it. You normally just put, like, a, say, Star Fox on top, and then you can emulate games that use the same FX chip. So it's a little bit trial and error, but thank you so much, Anthony. I really, really appreciate that, and I will repay the favor by sending you my Amstrad CPC 464. So thank you very much for that again, Anthony. Now, I'm thinking, well, I'm 37, I am going to get, you know, I'm nearing 40, I'm getting a bit old now. It never really bothered me that I was 35, 36, but now thinking about it, I'm going to be 37, 3 years of being away of being 40, and it's really made me think I am turning into an old git, really am. So anyway, what has this old git been up to then? I have been playing some emulation on my PSP. I've been playing loads of Sega Master System games recently. I recently discovered loads of classic games which I haven't played in absolutely ages. I've been playing Black Belt, Kung Fu Kid. I've been playing all the games I used to own as a kid. I've been playing Cloud Master, Action Fighter, and all these games. They're not necessarily brilliant games, but they were games that I really used to enjoy as a kid, and I probably used to get one game every 2 months, so I didn't really own that many games. Well, I say that many, I probably had about 20 games, but all the games I did own, I cherish for the fact that I played them non-stop. Some of them I couldn't get very far, others I did finish, but playing these again, really, the nostalgia hit, and it's a great feeling playing these games. Because, to be honest with you guys, work, being a husband, a father, doesn't leave me a lot of time to actually play games. And so I managed to take my PSP on the way to work. It takes me about an hour. And I did it on the PSP. And I tell you what, emulates fantastically. And all the memories came flooding back. And I'm going to return to YouTube, actually. And I think try and do a video at least twice a week. I think I'm going to start off with Sega Master System games. And then eventually and move on to the ZX Spectrum, Commodore, Amstrad, and even a few 8-bit wars. Just trying to find the time. Okay, so the next thing I want to talk about, guys, is events. Now, there's loads of events in 2014. It's retro gaming has really come back big time. It's just, and if you're not aware of these events, please check them out. Now, I'm doing this podcast a little bit on the fly. I haven't got all my show notes and everything with me. So, you know, if I'm sure if you Google it, you'll be able to find out. Why not even ask Jeeves, if anyone actually asks Jeeves anymore? Right, so the first retro gaming event is Geek, which is in Margate. And I'm not sure which weekend. I think it's one of the Saturday and Sunday. I believe it's the last weekend of the month. Now, to me, I really want to go to this. I didn't go to this last year. I think Swaney went with Foggy. They ended up going down there and had a good time. Now, I want to go this year. Hopefully, a few more members of the Retro Asylum team will go down there. But the reason why this is an event I want to go to was because Margate brings back so many memories to me. I remember being a kid, sort of like about 9 or 10, going on school trips to Margate, and they used to have loads of arcades down there on the seafront. They used to have like the big amusement park, the roller coasters, and this is where I used to get to play all the arcade games once a year. Because to be honest with you, there weren't really many arcade games near where I lived. You might have had one or two in a minicab office or in a chip shop or in a swimming pool, but they never had that many variety like they did, you know, on the seafront. And it was just something that I really look forward to every year. So I'm really looking forward to Geek. And like I said before, guys, check it out. Why not look for us? We'll be wearing the Retro Asylum t-shirt. And talking about Retro Asylum t-shirt, if you want to look extremely cool, why not get one? You know, you can get one from Retro Asylum Spreadshirt, I believe. If you type it in Google again, I'm sure it will show up. Now, anyway, the next event that's coming up, which I'm really looking forward to as well, is Play Expo. Now, Play Expo is probably the biggest retro gaming event out there, and it's returning to its home roots. It is in Blackpool in Norbert Castle, and that is the 5th and 6th of May, I believe. And I really can't wait for this. It's probably, you know, it's a great venue. It's by the seaside, you know, get a bit of fresh air. I know Swaney had like amazing memories last time staying in Hotel Alcatraz. And once again, I think I will definitely be going down there. So guys, you know, if you want to check it out, please come down and check that out with us. Now, the next event in May is Retromania 2. And if I do sound excited about that, it's because that's our own personal event. Now, Retromania 2 is being held in Play Nation Games, which is a game shop in Croydon, just south of London. And it's not a big venue. It's, you know, it's a shop, and it's an amazing shop. You know, the guys down there have been kind enough to let us have the top floor for free. And we're going to sort of do an event which is from 10 in the morning to 10 at night. Now, it is completely free to get in, but we will have a little bucket for donations and stuff like that. It will be for a charity as well. So it won't go to us. It will go for a charity. I'm not too sure which charity it will be yet. But, you know, I'll give you more information on that. But Retromania, it's going to be amazing. And I'll tell you why it's going to be amazing. Not only are we going to have about 30 different systems there, We're going to have tournaments, we're going to have raffles, we're going to have prizes. And the other amazing thing is that we're going to do is we're doing a live podcast there. But it's not just the Retrosylum podcast that's going to be there. We have got the amazing Nintendo Sushi podcast. And I think they're absolutely fantastic. If you haven't heard of Nintendo Sushi, go back a few episodes and you'll listen to Ace. He told us how he got into gaming. And once again, check out Nintendo Sushi podcasts on iTunes. They talk about Nintendo from the past, the present, and the future, because that's what they're like. They're really funny, really, really lovely guys. So they'll be doing a live podcast there. So also, we've got Lizanne Fisher and Jack Marshall from Retrograde Show. So they're going to be there as well. And it's another great podcast. And you know what? I don't mind plugging their show because, you know what? We're all retro gamers. We're all sort of like an amazing community. And I'm a big fan of both these podcasts. So I can't wait to actually hear them and see them live and actually talk to them, because I think that's a sign of a great podcast. When you listen to them, you know, you can sort of guess what they're going to say or what their opinions are going to be. So it'll be nice just talking to them about, you know, certain games. Like I said, guys, it's completely free, and that is on the Bank Holiday Monday on May, and that is in Play Nation in Croydon. Right, so I've got a few thank yous I want to say, basically. So these are to our sponsors. We've got a few sponsors, and we couldn't do the show without our sponsors. So once again, I want to give a special mention to Dino Dini. And Dino, thank you so much, because if you guys don't know, I mean, there was a few months ago where I was struggling to actually pay for the podcast, the hosting fees, because it just all of a sudden sprung up on me and I didn't have the cash for it. And I put something out on Twitter, and Dino Dini, basically, he paid for our hosting for 2 years. And that's the sort of person he is. He's absolutely fantastic. Matt interviewed him in a two-part podcast. And if you haven't heard that, I mean, I'd suggest go back and listen to it again. And if you have, you know, heard it, check it out again, because it's a fantastic podcast. So yeah, again, I'd like to say thank you to Dino Dini. I'd like to say thank you to Aaron White. I can't remember your Twitter name, but I'm sure if you type Aaron White on Twitter, it'll actually come up. I'd like to thank Splatty. I'd like to thank Uniforex, which is Anthony Ogden. I'd like to thank Michael Hay. I'd also like to thank Michael Keith as well, who also sponsored our show. So thank you very much, guys. And if you'd like to sponsor the Retrosylum podcast, all you have to do is go to retrosylum.com. There's a little PayPal button on the front page. Hit that and you can donate as little or as much as you like, because once again, we can't do the show without you, and you know, you guys make the show happen. Now, talking about you guys out there, this year, 2014, I think we are going to get our community involved a lot more. Now, the reason why I want to get you guys involved is, it's just, you guys are what make the show. You guys are retro gamers. You guys play games. So I want to hear more about, you know, what you think, what games you like, what games you don't like, the machines that you own. So we're going to mix the podcast up a lot this year. The way we're going to do it is, sometimes we're going to do group shows where we do like a group thing on Skype, or maybe we can meet up somewhere at these live events, which I do want to talk about in a moment or two. But yeah, you know, we want to get as many people's perspective and memories, just so that way we can make it one big happy community. So I'm really looking forward to talking to our listeners and talking about doing live podcasts. Now, we are working on doing live podcasts at certain gaming events. Now, it's not all 100% confirmed. There is one that is nearly 100%, and it's two that we're working on. So the idea is that at one of these retro gaming events, or a few, we're going to do a live podcast, just like we are going to do at Retromania. And it would be nice if you guys would come along, support us. And like I said before, please wear Retrosylum t-shirts. And that's another thing I want to plug, guys. We are going to have loads more different styles of Retrosylum t-shirts. So yeah, check it out on the internet, the good old interwebs. Right, so you know what? I have rambled long enough, and you guys want to know about our top 20 retro gaming. Now, this has been a difficult process, really, because I put a post on the forum, and on Twitter, I said, can you please send us your top 30 favorite games? Now, originally, I was going to do a top 50 game, but trying to narrow it down took absolutely forever. So I've had to sort of play around with it, because sometimes a certain game appeared twice, but it was on a different system. But to be honest with you, as long as it plays and pretty much feels the same, it's classed as the same game. You know, some of you might think, well, that's not quite fair, but you know what? Nevertheless, we've got an amazing top 20, and what I love about this top 20 is some of the games I know very well, and some of the other games I only recently discovered. Now, there is a machine that I've talked about in the podcast that I've only recently discovered and been playing via emulation, which I never owned back in the days, and our regular listeners will probably know what machine that is. So, you know what? Without further ado, let's start the top 20 Retro Asylum games as chosen by the team and the community. Right, so at number 20, we have Chucky Egg. Now, Chucky Egg is an amazing game. I think it came out in 1986. Originally, I thought it came out on the Electron, but it didn't. It actually came out on the ZX Spectrum first. And I believe the program was only about 16 or 17 when he actually made this game. And it is an amazing game. It's one of the best platformer games ever. Now, let me just describe it to our listeners who have never actually played this game before. It's a single screen. It's a platformer, it's really fast-packed game. You play a little guy called Hen House Harry, and your mission is to basically collect all the eggs before all the ostriches try and get you, or they eat all the birdseed, which you can collect for points as well. Honestly, the only way I can describe this game is just pure, fast-paced insanity. And I recently fell in love with this game again while playing it at the Christmas party. We were doing a Chucky Egg High Score Challenge, and I tell you what, you know, it was a great experience doing it. It's probably, you know, in my top 20, and that's the reason why I'm glad it got voted up here. You know, some people picked the Electron version, other people chose the ZX Spectrum version. Well, no one actually chose the C64 version, because, you know what, that's kind of a rubbish version. I highly recommend that you play Chucky Egg, because it's a superb game, absolutely fantastic game. Now, at number 19... is a classic arcade game by Taito. It is a Bubble Bobble. Bubble Bobble is a fantastic one or two player game where you play two bubble blowing dinosaurs, Bub and Bob. Now, again, the story somewhat varies depending on what version you play. Now, in the arcade version, I believe that your girlfriends have been kidnapped, and it's up to you to go through 100 levels to try and save them. But in the Game Boy or in the other versions, the storyline does somewhat vary, but you know what, the gameplay is still pretty much exactly the same, and I don't think there really is a bad version of this game, so this is why this is at number 19. And again, what I love about this game, let me just paint the picture for you guys. Single screen. You play a little dragon, your friend plays another little dragon, you blow bubbles, with those bubbles you capture the baddies, you pop the bubbles, and you collect some goodies. Sounds easy? It is not, basically. The first few screens are nice and easy, and then later on the screen, it just gets really, really tough. There's loads of different baddies, the game's got character, the game's got charm, and I love the music. The music is really fantastic. It's a great game. It's one of the best two-player games out there. Not so good in one player, but you play this game with a friend and, you know, you absolutely love it. And like I said, this game has come out on pretty much every computer from the, you know, the Spectrum to the Amstrad, C64. There's even been a recent updated version on the Amstrad, which is better than the original Amstrad version, because that was just a poor Spectrum port. So, yeah, check it out if you haven't played it in absolutely ages. Bubble Bobble, an absolute classic. Next up, at number 18, Batman the Movie. Now, Batman the Movie was Ocean's big success after RoboCop, because RoboCop was an amazing film license, and unfortunately RoboCop isn't in our top 20. Sorry if I've ruined that, guys, but it's not in there. Now, Batman is very, very similar to RoboCop in that respect. It's a great license. It splits the game up into different levels, and every level is a different sort of play area style. The first level is a platformer where you have to sort of like try and find the Joker or Jack Napier, and you have to try and kill him basically because he's up to no good. And what I loved about this game is the graphics. The graphics are amazing, the graphics are very detailed, the music is mind-blowingly fantastic. It really captured the atmosphere of the movie, because the second level is you're driving around the streets, swinging around the lampposts, and it's amazing how much of the film they managed to capture in the game. The game's not overly difficult until you get to the last few levels, but it's a great game. It's probably the best Batman game up until the Arkham Asylum series came out, you know, recently. Absolutely amazing game. So next up at number 17 we have Bombjack. Bombjack is one of my favorite arcade games ever. I absolutely love this game. Now let's quickly tell you what Bombjack's all about. Again, it's a classic game, one screen. And it just seems like a lot of the games on this top 20 are all based on one screen. But it's sometimes the classics are the best because they're so simple and they had to play around with gameplay as opposed to having amazing graphics. So you play this little character, I assume his name is Jack, and he's got to try and fly around and defuse the bombs. Now, there are loads of enemies flying around and you've got to try and avoid them. It's like a mixture between Pac-Man and Chucky Egg in a way, because you've got to try and collect things and avoid being hit. There are a few little power-ups as well which make you invincible, which you can sort of like destroy the baddies. But again, it's a game that's so damn addictive, honestly. I mean, I used to play this game back in the day in the arcades. Yeah, I thought it was okay. Played it on my cousin's Amstrad. Again, I thought it was okay. Played it on the Spectrum back in the day, and yeah, I enjoyed it. It wasn't until recently, though, playing it via emulation on the ZX Spectrum, that I really fell in love with this game again. And then I ended up playing the arcade version, and that's what made me realize how amazing the ZX Spectrum version was of this game. It's probably the best conversion of Bombjack there is out there. I mean, the Amstrad version is pretty good. It's very close to the Spectrum version, but I don't think the collision detection is as good as on the ZX Spectrum. The C64 version, I think, is absolutely appalling. The music's pretty good. The Game Boy version is somewhat decent, but again, guys, check this game out, Bombjack. It's so fast paced, and I've fallen in love with this game in recent years while playing an emulation, and I've had to get this game on like the ZX Spectrum, on the actual cassette, and I've got it now on the C64 as well. I absolutely love this game. It's one of the best games ever, and I'm kind of glad it's up there on the top 20. Now the next game is at number 16, wait for it guys, Swainy is going to be happy with this, Double Dragon. Now we've talked loads about Double Dragon on this game. What can we say about Double Dragon? It was basically the first time you could play as two guys beating the crap out of people, and it really felt like you were in a martial art movie. It was set in the 80s, it had that 80s tone, 80s hairstyles, the baddies were there, your girlfriend got kidnapped. It was just an amazing game, you know, you play Billy Lee, Jim Lee, two twin brothers. And it was up to you guys to basically just walk down the street beating the living crap out of everyone. Now, I know loads of other beat-em-ups have come out after that, but Double Dragon, like Dina said, has done things which no other beat-em-up has pretty much done since that day. You know, it scrolls from level 1 and it continues to level 2. There's no, like, cut-out sequence where it just fades out. It continues onto the next level. And you can do things like interact with the background. And it's a great game, it's not a long game, and in many ways, that's what I like about the game. It's a pick-up-and-play game, it's amazing. You know, you've got like a decent amount of moves. It's sort of like an unofficial follow-up to Renegade, because I think it was done by the same sort of programmers, but this took it in a whole new different direction, because, you know, in Renegade it was just one player, two players. There's nothing better than playing this game with a couple of friends. And that's where the gameplay is, especially at the end though. When you get to the end, spoilers if you've never finished the game, and if you haven't, why haven't you? You have to fight against each other. How amazing was that back in the day? It was mind-blowing. Now, I remember being disappointed with this on the ZX Spectrum, but I think most people voted for the Amstrad. A few people voted for the NES version, but the arcade version is a definitive version of Double Dragon, so check it out if you haven't played it in absolutely ages. Right, so next up at number 15, it is Mario 64. Mario 64 must have come out in 1997 here in the UK, maybe a little bit earlier, you know, in Japan, but I remember playing this game. It was the launch game that really made me think, wow. I mean, I've always loved the Mario games, like on the Nintendo, Super Nintendo, but this really took it to another level. It's just for amazing what it did, you know, for its time. It was the first true 3D platforming game. Now, there were 3D platforming games before this, but none of them really had it right like this game. You know, the camera in this game was absolutely fantastic. It was just so easy to control, and I think it was a game perfectly made for the Nintendo 64, you know, control pad. It's a funny control pad. It takes a while to get used to, but after a while, it really becomes second nature. Now, I remember reading about this in official Nintendo magazine. I think they had about a 2 or 3 page... Oh no, I think it was 4-page spread about it, and they really went in depth to this, and that was enough for me to think, you know what, I'll put a deposit on for my N64, and this is the game that sold me for it. I ended up paying £250 when the game, you know, when the N64 first came out, and about 3 months later, it went down in price. But again, it's a great game. It's tougher than I remember it. But it's a game that I want to finish once again. It's a beautiful looking game as well for its time. Alright, so we'll move on to the next game. Right, so the next game at number 14 is an 8-bit classic. It is Bruce Lee. This on the ZX Spectrum and the Commodore 64. Once again, not on the Amstrad, which is a shame. The Amstrad version is pretty similar, you know. Again, the gameplay is all pretty much exactly the same thing. Cosmetically, it, you know, the C64 is a lot better, the music as well. So what is Bruce Lee? Okay, this isn't a single screen game. It's a platforming game where you get to play the martial art hero, which is Bruce Lee, and you have to collect these little lanterns by climbing up ladders and jumping over objects. And it's not that easy because you've got the green Yamo chasing after you, and Nigel the Ninja is what I used to call him, and basically they're out to get you. Now, it's a two-player game, you can do this as well. Now, one of the guys ends up playing as the green Yamo, and one of you gets to play as Bruce Lee. Now, you could do it the way that I used to do it. Whenever I used to be the green Yamo, I used to help my friend who was controlling Bruce Lee. But sometimes I felt like being a bit of a git, and that's when I would end up attacking Bruce Lee himself, which was my friend. So it's a great fun game. It's not a big game. It's probably got about 30, 40 screens. You can probably finish it in about, what, under 10 minutes. But it's the gameplay that's still there. And it's a game that I reckon everyone should check out. Check out the C64 version. Check out the ZX Spectrum version. There are really good remakes of this game. There's Ultimate Bruce Lee, which I can't remember who made that game. Smiler, I believe. And that's got loads of different sort of like versions of it. It's got graphical, you know, updates of it. It's a great game there. And it's even a new Bruce Lee 2 version, which is like a sequel to this game, which I think captured the spirit of that game. So yeah, Bruce Lee is a fantastic game. Probably my favourite game featuring Bruce Lee out there. Much better than the Dragon, which was on the Super Nintendo. Right. At number 13, we have Ghosts and Goblins. Now, this is a Capcom classic game. This game is as hard as nails. It is really, really tough. Now, basically, you play a knight called Arthur, and it's up to you to rescue the princess who has been kidnapped by some demon. And it's a left-to-right scrolling game. You shoot things at the baddies. And I tell you what, it is one of the toughest games out there, but it's one of the nicest looking games. I love how well this game has aged, and that goes to show how beautiful the graphics are. They're very, very cartoony, and the music is phenomenal in this. It's absolutely amazing. Now, the 8-bit conversions of this were pretty decent, actually. There's a decent version of this on the NES. The Spectrum version, okay, graphically it's a bit horrible, but the gameplay's still there. But the version that I do love in this is the C64 version, and in the background you'll be hearing the C64 music. The C64 music is absolutely outstanding. It's completely different to the arcade. It's a great tune, actually, and it still holds up to this day. So that's what I love about the whole sort of games back in the day, because you could play an arcade game and then you'd get it on the 8-bit version, you'd play it on your home system, you'd go to your friend's house and he'd have it on a different system, and it was the same game but it'd look different and play different, and that is something that's sadly missing nowadays. But again, I think the thing that does let it down, this game, is it's really, really tough. I couldn't get past the third level back in the day. I can't even get past the first level nowadays. It's a tough game, but you know what? It's a game that I really love, and I want to get into it and maybe try and get to the fourth level. Maybe. Next up at number 12, we have Golden Axe. Now, Sega created an amazing game with this. Absolutely amazing. I was a big fan of Conan, and this made me feel like I was Conan. You play three characters. You've got the Barbarian, you've got the Amazon, and you've got the Dwarf. And then you've got Deathadder, who's the main baddie, and he's basically terrorizing the local villagers, and he's the mean big baddie, and it's up to you guys to sort of scroll from left to right, beating the crap out of these guys. Now, what I loved about this game is the whole sort of scenery and backdrop. You know, it's set in the olden days. You know, you get to sort of like fight with swords, you get to fight, you get to go on dragons and weird creatures, you get to fight skeletons that are just like out of a Ray Harryhausen movie. It's got so much atmosphere, and what really helped elevate this game was the music. The music is phenomenal. It is absolutely stunning. Honestly, it's, at the time, it really felt like a scale orchestra playing in the background. You listen to it nowadays, it's not orchestra sounding like, but it's still very atmospheric, and that's what I loved about Golden Axe. You know, there's nothing quite like playing this game with two players. I remember playing this game in Margate, and I absolutely loved it, and I couldn't wait for the conversion to be ported over to the home computers. And the 8-bit computer versions aren't that great. There is a very good version, actually, on the Sega Master System. But unfortunately, it's only one player. You can only select one character, but it's still a pretty good conversion. The Sega Mega Drive version, for years, I could have sworn was arcade perfect. Now, due to emulation, you know, I've played the arcade version. You can see there are many graphical differences, but it's as close to the arcade as you can. And I think it even has, like, an extra level as well, which is fantastic. It's got a one-on-one fighting mode as well. But Golden Axe definitely deserves to be there in the top 20. Next up, we have at number 11, International Karate Plus. Now, well, International Karate Plus is what made one-on-one fighting games cool. And you know how it made one-on-one fighting games cool? By adding an extra player and making it three players, basically. So you've got three fighters on the screen fighting against each other, and that is, it's amazing, because fighting against one other character is tough enough as it is, and then you've got the added thing of another character who's just willing to kick you in the back, or flying kick you in the back of the head, or leg sweep you. But what made this game really amazing, it just updated International Karate, which was very similar to Karate Champ, which was an arcade game. It was, you know, it was too similar, I thought, and by adding that extra third player, it gave it a whole new character. And then you've got the amazing music, you've got the amazing backdrops. The ZX Spectrum version plays okay, looks okay, but it cannot compete to the C64 version. The C64 version is phenomenal. It's got loads of little hidden things in the background. I think you type an M, the guy's trousers fall down. The Amiga version, which I've been playing recently, which you can hear in the background, is awesome as well. It really is mind-blowingly fantastic. It's a game that if you haven't played, pick it up, and if you have played it, play it again. Definitely one that I'm looking forward to playing with you Retromaniacs if it is out there at one of these retro gaming events. Okay, so now we've reached the top 10. So far, the top 20 has been absolutely fantastic. Everything from 20 to 10. Now at number 10 is Lemmings on the Amiga. Now, the first time I played Lemmings was actually on the ZX Spectrum, because earlier on in the podcast I mentioned that I never actually owned an Amiga. It was a system that I just didn't have. It skipped me by because I ended up having a Super Nintendo or a Sega Mega Drive, and I think I did end up playing it eventually on some of the other sort of systems it did come out on, like the Super Nintendo and the Mega Drive. Lemmings was such an amazing game. It came out on pretty much every system known to mankind. It's a simple game, and that's what it works about it. So for those of you that aren't familiar, or for those of you that need a little bit of reminding, basically what you do is you move a little cursor around the screen and you have to save all these little suicidal lemmings from killing themselves. It's like a little platforming sort of a layout, and the lemmings just keep on walking in one direction. There's loads of objects that will kill them, and you have to use a little control panel at the bottom to basically try and save them by clicking on the right icon. Sounds easy. It is for the first 2-3 levels, but after that, my god, does this game get tough. Maybe it's just me, but I love this game. It's just trying to figure out exactly what to do. You know, you're getting so far at a certain point, and then your character dies, and then you mess it all up. But yeah, recently I played the Amiga version, and I can see how much better it is than all the other versions I actually played it on. Now, don't get me wrong, I think the ZX Spectrum version is a great conversion. You know, it's all in monochrome, but I think the playability is all there. Now, one of the things that the Spectrum version, the Super Nintendo version, all the other versions lack, that the Amiga does have, is the mouse control. Now, I think you could do it on the mouse on the Super Nintendo, but I don't think I had one back in the days. But the mouse makes the world of difference in this game. It really just makes it so much easier to sort of like click on your lemmings, click on the icons, and it really just makes it so much more fun to do it this way. So yeah, Lemming is at number 10. Next up, at number 9, we have Rainbow Islands. Now, Rainbow Islands, in this top 20, we had loads of different sort of versions voted for. We had the arcade, we had the ZX Spectrum, we had the C64, and you know what, it's a great game no matter what system you play it on. I think there is a poor version actually on the NES, but the NES has got two different versions, so hey, that counts as a good version, I take it. So Rainbow Islands is the follow-up to Taito's Bubble Bobble. It's a sequel, it's only one player unfortunately, but you know what, this game plays so much better as a one-player game than Bubble Bobble does. The premise of the game is you play Bub and you have to sort of like get to the top of the screen by shooting out rainbows and climbing over the rainbows, and you shoot the baddies with your rainbows, and that's as simple as that. Basically, it's so simple but so damn addictive, and the whole thing goes with the music from the Wizard of Oz, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. It's a great game, again, that's just been converted superbly on pretty much every system. Now, the first version I actually ever played this was in the arcade. I loved the arcade game. I thought the arcade game was absolutely amazing. Now, I had an old school friend that used to live not too far from me, and he basically had Rainbow Islands, and he let me borrow it. And I tell you what, I was hooked on this game. Never before had I seen a game so colourful that moved around so smoothly on the ZX Spectrum. You know, fair enough, there's colour clash, yeah, but if all of them had little black borders, it would look pretty good. It's very similar to the arcade game. And I think after that, I ended up playing it on the PS1 collection when it came out, the Bubble Bobble collection, which was really, really, really good conversion, actually. And then eventually, thanks to MAME, I ended up playing the arcade game once again, which is probably the definitive version, obviously. But Rainbow Islands is such an amazing game. I know Glenn from the Retro Asylum team is a big fan of this game. So yeah, Rainbow Islands World deserves to be in the top 10 position at number 9. Right, at number 8, we have another Amiga classic. We have Cannon Fodder. Never been so much fun. Again, was a game that completely just bypassed me. I just had never played this up until like about, say, 7 years ago. Now, I only discovered it, not even on the Amiga, but I discovered it on the Sega Mega Drive and Super Nintendo. And again, it was one of those games that just didn't quite feel right because you didn't have a mouse, you know, and the Amiga, obviously, you have a mouse. It's a lot more easier to control. And behind that, on the Sega Mega Drive and the Super Nintendo, there was a great game, so I still enjoyed it. And it's just the whole premise, you control loads of little soldiers, you're out there in the sort of battlefield and you've got to sort of control them, shoot people. And what I didn't realize was that eventually, when I did play the Amiga version, is how much more better it actually is. You've got the amazing intro to Cannon Fodder. It's like an amazing intro. The music is phenomenal. All the little sound effects that was just missing on the other 16-bit home consoles. The Amiga version is so damn addictive, and it's something which I intend to play a lot more of. It's just, it's a classy game. You know, it's a fun little game that you can pick up and play. The more you go into the game, the further, you know, it gets a little bit tougher. I mean, it's a great game. And again, I've got to love the music. The music is one of the best soundtracks of actually of any game. I love the main title tune. It's phenomenal. Right. So next up at number 7, we have Streets of Rage 2. Streets of Rage 2 is the amazing follow-up to Streets of Rage 1. Now, Streets of Rage was Sega's answer to Final Fight because, you know, Final Fight ended up on the Super Nintendo, and I think Sega did an amazing job with Streets of Rage. Now, Streets of Rage 2 is kind of a remake, or it's very, very similar to the first Streets of Rage game, but it does many things which makes it a great sequel. For a start, you've got more selectable characters. All the characters have got special moves. All the characters have got their own identity. Now, the best thing that I like about this game as well, all the character sprites are a lot bigger. Everything moves at a decent rate. But what I love about this game the most is two things. I love the flashy, neon, glowing colors of the game. The graphics are absolutely out of this world. And again, the music on this really uses the Mega Drive sound chip to its best ability ever. It's probably some of the best music I've heard on a Sega Mega Drive. Now, I know Matt Dinaris isn't really a big fan of the Sega Mega Drive sound, but what they managed to achieve to this, on this system is phenomenal, you know. Streets of Rage 2 is really complemented by the amazing sort of like ravey, techno-y music and the bright ambiatic colors of the background. It's just so damn addictive, you know. I remember just playing this game as a kid, going around to one of my friend's house when I was meant to be at school, and it drew me in. And then I had to get it on my Sega Mega Drive a few years later, and then eventually I've basically bought it on every single system that's been available on. I've bought it on the Xbox 360, I've bought it on Steam, I've bought it on the Nintendo Wii when it came out. It's just a great game, and if you haven't checked it out, really check it out. You know, I know Dean doesn't like it as much as Double Dragon. I think it's better than Double Dragon, but that's an argument for another podcast. Right, so at number 6, we have Final Fight. So this is the Final Fight. It was meant to be like a sequel to Street Fighter, and it was even known as Final Fight Street Fighter 2. And basically, it's another scroll and beat 'em up, very similar to Streets of Rage 2 and Double Dragon. Now, what makes this game stand out is the large sprites. The sprites are absolutely huge, and for that, it really sticks in my mind. So I remember playing this in the arcades, and I'd never seen character sprites this big in a beat-em-up game before. It just really blew my mind. And I really like the main characters. You've got Hagar, who's the mayor. You've got Guy, and you've got Cody. Now, each of the characters has got different abilities. Now, the character I normally went for was the mayor character, Mike Hagar, or Hagar, or however you want to call him, because he's a wrestler. And back in the day, I used to be a big wrestling fan, and you could do spinning pile drivers and so on. So once again, you go from left to right, you beat the crap out of loads of cool enemies. Now, this did get converted to the Super Nintendo. Now, at the time, I did think it was a decent conversion, but to be honest with you, it's very, very stripped down. It really, you know, loads of characters have been changed because the Nintendo had this policy of being politically correct. You know, you couldn't do certain things, so they changed up a few characters. It's got a level that's missing. And the worst thing on the Super Nintendo was you could only be one character. I mean, it was one player only out of the three characters you could play. So you could play two characters, and then they came out with Final Fight Guy, and which was a shame, because I'm sure they could have done it, because you had games like Rival Turf, which really capitalized on the lack of a two-player game of Final Fight on the thing. Now, I didn't play a decent version of Final Fight on the home system until I played it on a friend's Mega CD. And I'll tell you what, although the graphics are a little bit grainy, it has got a few extras, but one of the things that really does amaze me about Final Fight on the Mega CD is the music. The music really outdoes the arcade game. It's a great remix of the Final Fight track. It's phenomenal. And one of the other things I want to talk about Final Fight is some of the amazing characters. Again, it really lends itself to the 80s, early 90s sort of a feel that was out there. You know, all the characters were sort of like rockers or punks. And you even sort of got a character called Andor, which is basically Andre the Giant. So it's an interesting game with loads of variety. I've recently purchased that again on my Xbox 360, and I love the HD version. You know, but you can't beat playing this on the MAME or on the actual arcade. So yeah, great game. Now, next up at number 5, we have The Secret of Monkey Island. And once again, we have another Amiga game, which for years and years and years I had never played. I used to see this game in loads of top 20 games. You know, some people said it was like one of the best games ever. And I hated upon this game. I really didn't like it because it was alien to me. The Amiga didn't mean anything to me because I didn't own one. I was sort of a Spectrum fan, Sega Master System, Mega Drive, NES, Super Nintendo. So it skipped me by. And it wasn't until the HD version that came out on the Xbox 360 and on the iPhone that I started playing this game again. I gave it loads of sort of tries and I couldn't get into it until slowly but surely I realized what this game actually was. It was a great way of telling a story. I was a big fan of the Dizzy games, and this managed to do an adventure game in a different sort of way by using point and click. And it is a great way to tell a story. And what I love about this LucasArts game is the characters. The characters are very charismatic. They're funny. You get some amazing things that you have to do. It's a great game, man. And it's something that I wish I would have played back in the day. But at the moment, you know, I'm playing Monkey Island 2. I finished The Secret of Monkey Island. And again, it's one of my favorite games ever. And I'm glad it's in the top 20 list there. So, oh, and if you guys haven't checked it out, guys, please check out Sam, Mr. Sid's episode on Point and Click Adventures, because he talks really highly of The Secret of Monkey Island. Loads of people give their feedback and opinion on that particular game. Right, so next up at number 4 is R-Type. Now, R-Type is an amazing, beautiful game. Now, it's very Geiger-esque, basically, in a way, where it's just everything is very biomechanical. And what I love about this game is it took the whole Defender, it took the whole other sort of like left to right shooting games and just added something by just adding the Force Ball. And what I loved about the Force Ball was it was an indestructible metal which you could use as a shield. You could shoot it out to destroy enemies in front of you. You could stick it on the back of you and enemies could crash into you. So it really had that extra element. And all the power-ups in this game really just stood out. They were bright, they were colourful, the sound effects were amazing. And who can forget, you know, the first level boss Guardian, which was, I can't remember what his name is, but he's very similar to like the alien from Aliens. And the big massive spaceship on the end of level 2 is just out of this world. Now there are some amazing conversions with this game, which I do want to talk about. The ZX Spectrum version, wow, has to be one of the greatest conversions ever. It plays pretty much bang on like the arcade game. Fair enough, the play area is a little bit smaller, but the playability is all there, all the levels are there, all the baddies are there, even the big spaceship at level 2 is there. It's a great conversion. The other great conversion as well is the Sega Master System version. I love the Sega Master System version. I think it's normally underrated when it comes to arcade conversions. And what I love about the Sega Master System version as well, it has got an extra level. It's got a hidden extra level. I'm not too sure where about it is, but I'm sure if you look for it on YouTube, someone's basically posted that. And again, it's a game that just is timeless. It is so easy to get into, but really tough. Once you get past level 2, the game really does become insanely hard. And I've actually finished this game, but I finished it on the Xbox 360 on the HD versions, which gives you continue after continue after continue after continue. Without that, there's no way I could have done that. Now, there is someone on our forums at Retro Asylum who actually managed to do this on one credit, and how on earth they managed to do this, I have no idea. Jedi skills is what comes to mind. But R-Type is probably one of the best shooting games ever. It's at number 4. Next up, at number 3, we have Street Fighter 2. Fan of Street Fighter 2. I absolutely love this game. Now, Street Fighter really just didn't make much of an impact in the arcades. It was an average sort of so-and-so one-on-one fight 'em up. It did stand out because it had these pressure pads, which depending on how hard you hit them, the character reacted to them. But loads of these machines were, you know, ended up breaking because people were just really whacking them hard. Now, Street Fighter 2 for me really came out of nowhere because I wasn't expecting a sequel as good as this for an average sort of beat 'em up. And wow, did this game really just reignite gaming again? Because I think at this time, it's like the early 90s, arcade games were sort of really dying out. You know, you had loads of home systems that were becoming really popular, and Street Fighter 2 really brought it back to the mainstream. I hadn't seen a game this big since probably Pac-Man, Space Invaders. It really was huge, this game. It's really hard to describe how huge this game is, and it really stands the test of times because, you know, like, it's still going to this day. Now, Street Fighter 2, basically, the first one is 8 characters you get to select. There were sort of like extra sort of different versions like Turbo, Hyper Edition, where you get to play the 4 playable boss characters. But for me, Street Fighter 2, the arcade game, it's just beat 'em up perfection. It is chess when it comes to beat 'em up. I know a lot of people rave on about Mortal Kombat. I think that's slightly more basic. That's more like the drafts, checkers of beat 'em up games. Fair enough, it's got gore, it's got some amazing fatalities, but Street Fighter 2 is a game that, you know, people play professionally all around the world. And recently I got my butt kicked at Retromania, and I'm looking for revenge at Retromania 2, Street Fighter 2. It's amazing. It's got loads of different characters, loads of different martial arts styles. All different characters have different backdrops. It's set all around the world. The characters are iconic. They're absolutely amazing. I mean, in the new Street Fighter characters from Street Fighter, Super Street Fighter, so they didn't quite really match up to the 8 original characters. It didn't quite feel right, but the original 8 characters like Blanka, Dalsin, Chun-Li, Guile, E-Honda, Zangief, Ryu, Ken were just amazing. You know, it's the best beat 'em up ever, basically. So number 2, we have OutRun. Now, this is a game that just blew my mind when I went into the arcade. You got to sit down and you got to play this game. And what really stood out was the amazing, cheerful music. You know, the first level is set on a beach, and you've got the amazing sort of like palm trees, the ocean in the background. You've got your blonde girl there in your Ferrari car, and that amazing soundtrack really elevated this amazing game. Now, if you were to strip away all that, it's just an average game, but Sega really struck gold because Sega really did do music well when it came to its arcade games. This game was so damn addictive because I always wanted to sort of like find out what the next level looked like. The music, you know, you could choose at the beginning what sort of music you wanted in the game. Now, I never got past more than about 3 levels into this game, but it's a game again that got so and so mixed reaction home conversions. The Spectrum was terrible, the C64 was alright, the Amiga and the Atari ST, again, not great conversions. There is a semi-decent conversion on the Sega Master System. I think OutRun 3D is slightly better than the regular OutRun. You can turn the OutRun 3D into a 2D thing. It plays slightly better than the Master System, the first one that came out on there. But OutRun, again, it's a classic. It's one of the best racing games ever, and deservedly it is at number 2. So let's quickly go back from the top 20 before we go into the number 1 slot. See if you guys can guess what this game is through the top 10. At number 10 we had Lemmings, at number 9 we had Rainbow Islands, at number 8 we had Cannon Fodder, at number 7 we had Streets of Rage 2, at number 6 we have Final Fights, at number 5 we have The Secret of Monkey Island, at number 4 we had R-Type, at number 3 we had Street Fighter 2, at number 2 we had OutRun. And the RetroSylum number 1 game chosen by the RetroSylum team and the RetroSylum community is Super Mario World on the Super Nintendo. Now, what can I say about this game? This game came bundled with my Super Nintendo or everyone else's Super Nintendo. And if you're a fan of Mario, this really did take it to another level. Now don't get me wrong, Mario 1 is fantastic, Mario 2 is great, Mario 3 is often described as one of the best Mario games, but I think Super Mario World has aged a lot better than any other Mario game out there. Graphically, it still looks stunning to this day. Now you had 98 levels, a lot of the levels were hidden levels, it also had the introduction of Yoshi. It had like an amazing map screen, which sort of took it from its inspiration from Super Mario 3. But what I loved about this game is it subtly used Mode 7 in the background for certain things. The music was phenomenal in this. It's really, really catchy. Star Road again really let you access, you know, you could finish the game without actually doing all the levels. And that's what I loved about this game, was trying to hunt down all the levels, finding a level where you could sort of like get loads of lives, hunting down for that extra exit. It was just mind-blowing. This game is platform perfection, and I think to this day I don't think there is a better platformer out there. I've played loads of platformer games on the NES, Super Nintendo, PS1, on the N64, but nothing can really beat the perfection that is Super Mario World. So yeah guys, I'd like to say thank you very much for listening to the show, and again I'd like to say a special thank you to everyone that contributed to our top 20, and that was Andreas Wanda, Mikey J. Hay, Tony Simons, Paul Monaghan, Paul Davis, Scopey, Pipes Franco, Steve Perry, Mr. Sid, Garen. All you guys, you know, sent me in your top 30 list, and we managed to narrow it down to a top 20. So one more thing I want to mention, guys, before we round this up. Now, I want to give a big special thanks to Aaron from Twitter. Sorry if I've forgotten what your Twitter handle is, mate, but I'm doing this on the fly, really. But Aaron has got like an amazing prize from Ocean. And if you want to win this amazing prize, what we're going to do is we're going to run this competition till the end of the month. And the way you can win this, the prizes are, and I'll post a little link to the prizes on the actual forum, but the way you can win the prizes are, all you have to do is put hashtag RetroAsylum podcast, and then you do the sentence, I want to win the Ocean goodies because, and basically I'm going to pull them out of a hat, the winners, at random, and the winner will win the Ocean goodies. So yeah, thanks very much again, guys. I'm sorry if it's a little bit on the fly, but it's running a little bit late. It's been a bit busy over the Christmas period. My little one's not been too good, so I've had to do this here and there at work, at home, in the middle of the night. So guys, thank you very much, and we'll see you next week with another 8-Bit Life, which is based on Ben Dugleish. Look forward to this, Sam. See you next time.